football on Off the Ball.
The way they're going up, they're set up now with Mali in the middle over there as well. They're set up to just not concede, bring it back to Tala. They know how potent they are here.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Sunday Paper Review
on Off the Ball,
brought to you by Virgin Media. Enjoy an unbeatable lineup of live football and golf with Sky Sports and Sports Extra from Virgin Media.
And you are welcome to the Sunday Paper Review and Off the Ball. John Duggan with you today, sitting in on the papers for Adrian Barry. We're delighted to be joined in studio by the Irish Daily Mail writer Linda Marr and the Sunday Independent columnist Declan Lynch. Linda and Declan, how are we both today?
All good.
Very good, John. Big greatest day of the year.
It is Premier League Christmas Day.
We have dreamed of these days.
Willy Wonka here in the studio, Declan.
Yeah. It's actually an odd thing that if you regard the last football season as more effectively finishing in the middle of April, because, I mean, Liverpool were on the home straight then, it's been like 4 months without meaningful football. Some would say the Club World Cup was supposed to be a kind of a methadone treatment for the addiction. It was not anything of the kind, of course. So that's four months is like extraordinary. I mean, how have we lived?
Get a games, rugby, Lions tour, bit of golf.
Yeah, no, that true. Okay.
Help.
But
for the soccer purists.
Yeah. I mean, that's all fine. Those things are all kind of part of one's portfolio, if you like, right? But the key to it all that makes it all sort of, the one that they all revolve around really is our beloved Premier League, our league as they call it. And here we are.
Yes.
Rejoice.
Let's look at the front pages of the sports sections and the back pages as well. The Sunday Times today, something old, something new. Haaland scores 2 and debutants Rangers and Cherki are the others. The City make flying start. Fan arrested for racist abuse of Semenyo. So David Lynch writing that a man was arrested yesterday accused of racially abusing the Bournemouth winger Antoine Semenyo at Anfield on Friday night. We have the Sunday Independent Sports section. Paul Kimmage, when did footballers stop being people? We'll come to that in a moment. A police arrest fan after Anfield racist abuse. Semenyo thanks clubs and teammates for their support. So a 47-year-old man from Liverpool was arrested after the alleged racial abuse of Antoine Semenyo in the Bournemouth-Liverpool game on Friday. Back of the Irish Daily Mail, back with a bang, Premier League special. And as I said to miss Chelsea game, as Spurs close in, and we need a quick fix to the Isak saga, says Eddie Howe. And we have the back of the Sun on Sunday. Kelleher wanted to be gloved. He's ready to shine at Brentford. Kevin Kelleher set to start today. Well, maybe he might not actually. There's maybe reports that he might have a knock. So whether, but like ultimately, he will be the number one at Brentford for the season. Back into frame, legend David De Gea as an option for Amorim. That's an unusual back page story. Ed won't wrap the two in army. Eddie Howe avoided condemning Newcastle fans who chanted one greedy after Alexander Isak refused to play at Aston Villa. An early win, but Pep's miffed. Pep Guardiola moaned he's still not happy having too many players in his unhealthy squad. Too many people. I like a deep squad competing in all competitions, but maybe not happy with the depth of his squad. Sunday World Sports, master plan. Ruben Amorim hopes not to look back in anger. There's all the Oasis references by keeping Jokeres scoreless. And we're not healthy, says Pep. Too many people. I don't want to leave players at home. It's not healthy. You can't create a good vibe or atmosphere to compete. Everyone has to feel they can play and help. The club has known it since last season. It's not news, but the situation is what it is. In the next 2 weeks, people will talk with players and agents to find a solution. Like one player who could be leaving, for example, is Ederson, who was not involved yesterday in the Wolves game, which they won by 4-0. Just kind of on your theme there, Declan, just want to start off with Shane McGrath in the Irish Mail on Sunday, just talking about the Premier League. And this is the quote, and not a day too soon, the Premier League is back with the declining relevance of the soap operas that dominated British popular culture from the 1970s through to the turn of the millennium. The drama provided by the league is now its most powerful cultural export. There's plenty wrong with the Premier League, but there's also a lot of snobbery about how it's covered, including by some of those paid to provide the commentary. This is drama. Don't apologise for savouring it.
Well, one aspect of it that's very interesting is, like, it is this hugely successful global thing, right? I mean, it's like the World League, right? Except it takes place in Britain, which has been determined over the last, say, 10 years to exclude the idea that foreigners can be a kind of benign influence on their society, right? Brexit, all these kind of things, which that psychology is almost like the opposite. We can do all this ourselves, you know? And this, right in front of them, is this astonishing example of this amazingly successful thing, which is hugely dependent on people from
all over the world,
every country in the world, right?
Yeah.
And there's no answer to that, really, is there? I mean, it's like the basic argument, if you like, in our culture is the world better with a kind of a nationalistic approach to things?
From some elements of Britain. Yeah. I mean, not Keir Starmer or Sadiq Khan, I would say.
No, but the prevailing
trust. There's a trend there. There's definitely a strain of English nationalism in Britain, and Nigel Farage may be representing that.
Yeah, and Nigel Farage widely tipped to be the next Prime Minister.
Yes.
So it's a really strong sort of movement, if you like. And working against it is this, like, thing, it's almost too big to see. Sometimes things are too obvious to actually not make note of, right? But here we are with this thing. Like, we are living in a completely different country, and we're, you know, deeply engaged with this thing, right? People in, like, Ghana are probably engaged with it, right? So it's the great argument against all that Little England thing. And for that, it's very good. There are terrible things about it as well. I mean, really awful things about the Premier League. At one level, you could almost say, if it wasn't for the football, you wouldn't have anything to do with it. But that's rather a big aspect of it, I guess. You know, so we'll get onto that in a few minutes. You know, like Paul Kimmage alludes to aspects of that as well. But it's impossible to think of the Premier League without having a whole load of really negative views as well. You know, about all sorts of cultural things as well.
And also, Petri state ownership of clubs, this kind of thing.
Everything. Like, it runs, there are always,
VAR, all the things in it. But nothing's perfect. Look, we have the common travel area. Mm. We can go to the UK on a boat or, on a plane. We grew up watching Match of the Day, a lot of us. I think some people would rather that we are more interested in the League of Ireland. I think you can do both. I was at, in 2018 for my 40th, I was at Liverpool-Manchester City. It was a goalless draw at Anfield. But at the end of that season, City had 98 points, Liverpool had 97. Mm. City won the league, Liverpool won the Champions League. Mm. And the quality of the football was off the scale. Mm-hmm. The touches, the skill, and this is the elite of sport. I mean, the quality of the games, like on Friday, Liverpool-Bournemouth, yesterday, like at Manchester City with the conveyor belt of new talent, Gianni Rangers coming in and scoring and setting up a couple. Mm. It is just sport at its zenith when you talk about actual football.
When you mentioned that say, City and Liverpool era as well, increasingly it's now quite clear that Liverpool team in particular is just one of the great teams. There's always a shadow over City because of our famous 115 charges. But when you look at that team of, like, Mane, Salah, Firmino, Alisson Becker, Virgil van Dijk, they seem like, you know, they're like the Dutch team of the 1970s, which is still a legendary team, even though they didn't actually win a World Cup. People in their heads have they did win the World Cup, really. Do you know what I mean? And I think it's quite a similar thing. So you have almost historically good football going on there, right? The stuff that in 20 years' time, I think that particular team will be just revered as, like, how did that get together? How did such a good team, first of all, come together and also not win the league for the most part? Or, you know,
just the one 2020 year.
Yeah, sure.
And even yesterday, Sunderland beating West Ham 3-0, haven't played in the Premier League in 8 years. And then if you're watching Match of the Day last night, you could feel the atmosphere through the television. Mm-hmm. So, remarkable.
But I think the things Shane is pointing out are wrong with the game there is fans don't care about that kind of stuff. You know, when you get there on the day, you're walking up, you know, whether it's Matt Busby Way or you're walking up Anfield Way and you're on the way to the ground, none of that matters. You know, that's not what you're thinking about. All you're thinking about is your, you know, historical kind of connection to this thing. And, you know, what you're saying is the easy access we have to world-class sport, is not something that we should be taking for granted, because, you know, there's a lot of people travel the world to see this. And, you know, we can hop on, as you say, a boat or a plane. We, you know, don't even have to bring your passport if you want to go. So, you know, to have that kind of access to that kind of, to that level of a sport, it is not something that should be sniffed at. It's not something, you know, it's something that we should embrace. And it's, you know, you kind of have history, like you have cultural connections with the country as well. I think the, you know, talking about the number of foreigners now in the Premier League and versus the Little England thing, I think it's the reason they get behind the national team so much is to kind of say, this is still our sport. And, you know, but I think it will start affecting their national team as it goes down the line and as, you know, the number of English players in the Premier League diminishes. And I think it already has, and I think it further will. But it's, we don't have that, we don't have access to that level in any other sport. So I think, you know, that's why it resonates with people so much here. You know, there's not as many Irish players there now as we would like.
Certainly not
as many as there was in the past. And, you know, that's an awful shame, but it doesn't, you still have that connection, the people, you know.
Yeah, we were sort of here before anyone else. I mean, like, Irish people have had that sort of connection with English football forever. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? So to some extent, we thought of it first, like, you know. But the richness of that experience is just something that's part of us. And it shouldn't be downplayed. I mean, it's like it's a really good thing, and you know, the fact that we are sort of next door to it is tremendous, you know.
And we've had John Giles, Ronnie Whelan, mm-hmm. Roy Keane, Dennis Irwin, all these top players, Robbie mm-hmm. Keane, Damien Duff, mm-hmm. and obviously less of them now. And with Brentford playing today, Cuilan Kelleher, whether he plays or not, but he'll be number one for the season. Nathan Collins, captain of Brentford, Josh Cullen, captain of Burnley, mm-hmm. Jacob Ryan, probably going to start for Everton most times this season. So, look, there's been implications with Brexit and everything. We've got Troy Parrott and Evan Ferguson playing abroad now in Holland and Italy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I still think you can have the League of Ireland and obviously want that to grow. But this is a 12 billion euro, mm-hmm. pound, dollar business.
Yeah, but sure, like, I mean, I grew up supporting at Lone Town, obviously, yeah. and Liverpool. It did not in any way sort of diminish my life. In fact, it just enhanced anything, right? There was never in my mind any problem with that or any division. It was like better, you know what I mean? It made it didn't diminish my great love of at Lone Town, the fact that I also love Liverpool. So, you know, that's never a negative thing. But it's interesting as well about the England national team. It's fascinating to see how the England national team doesn't work by comparison with how those players work in the Premier League. It's like just some experiment in, you know, how nationalism is a bad idea, because you suddenly realise that all these guys, like even top English players, you know, when you put them with players from seven other countries, they look wonderful. When you just put them with their own guys, there's something not there. It's not. It's like they're too sort of, there's a fear or something that grips them. There's a kind of a lack of cohesion, right? It's weird to think that, isn't it? That you think that it would be the other way around. Like England, for as long as I've been looking at them, they have this kind of way of like, one guy gets the ball and he stops and he gives the ball to another guy, and it's like, oh yeah, I'll give it to another. There's no sort of collective intelligence or something. You know the way you see like Iceland or something, and they all seem to be on the same page, and they're all, even though they're not individually talented at all, like the England players, they have a cohesion and an internal kind of sort of logic to them. England don't really have that, and so you'd think they would, but they don't. And in a weird way, it's the international nature of the teams they play for that gives them that, and they fit into that bigger whole so much better, you know?
Yes.
So it's really interesting, you know?
It is, and I think maybe the clubs being such big rivals has probably hindered English players playing together over the years. I think Gareth Southgate brought in a cultural reset where they all enjoyed it, and that's what Tuchel is, a hired gun to get England to win a World Cup. Mm-hmm. It might not happen, as you say, for the reasons you've outlined there. Mm-hmm. Just on Paul Kimmage's piece in the Sunday Independent, I'll just quote the first three paragraphs of it. I quote here, there was a remarkable interview with Cuilan Kelleher in the Daily Telegraph on Friday, exclusive, as we say in the trade. To be honest, I don't have much time for the Premier League these days, but I have passion for interviews. Here's what was remarkable. In the 1940 words presented, there wasn't one that interests me.
So who is Cleven Gallagher? Does he have a pulse, bleed, breathe? How's his life been so far? Isn't he getting married soon? What have 10 years of Liverpool taught him? Does he fart, eat, read? Okay, man, all manly and in clouds, but it makes me wonder, when did footballers stop being people? Was not getting anything interesting out of that interview.
Yeah, this is something I've experienced an awful lot over the last few years. So I'm features editor with the Irish Daily Mail, and we'll often get sports people offered to us for interviews related to a sponsorship of this or that. And, you know, that's all, it's great, it's good content. But when I'm getting to the point where I'm loath to take them because they don't say anything. There's a couple of reasons for that. One is that if you are an elite athlete, you probably haven't got much else going on in your life. And that's fair enough. You know, I probably never did. So, your be all, your end all is training, is playing, is, you know, you have to eat certain foods. You're not really able to go out, you know, kind of socializing as in a normal way that people would. You're traveling a lot. You don't, you know, you probably haven't maybe got married at this point. So it puts me off. I tend to think they need to stay on the back pages. And, you know, the back pages tend to be more for wanting to know everything about the sport. Whereas in the front pages of paper, you want more about the person and the lifestyle and the personality behind it. And then one of the other reasons is that they are media trained to within an inch of their lives now, if they're at any kind of high level. There's a great example in the Keith Andrews interview today where they almost ask themselves the questions. So they are trained to turn, if they get a question they don't like, turn it into an answer you want, because you're in control here. You're the one who's talking. You're the person who can, you know, take this in the direction you want to. We also now have the case where PR people are sitting in on interviews, and if an interview is going away, they don't like, they just step in and stop it, which is horrific. You know, it's an awful way to try to, you know, do business from our point of view. I was at my nephew plays for the D7 darts team up in Cabra. He's 14 and they have a brilliant setup up there, and they had Luke Littler in the week that the Premier League was here in Dublin. I went along and his PR people were there, his marketing people. I said, you know, is there any chance I can get a quick chat with him while he's here? Oh, absolutely. Delighted with myself. Nothing. He says nothing, you know. And part of that is because he's still a child, you know. And the other part is, again, he's been absolutely media trained. In darts, it's been good in one way because Luke Humphreys is so good on a microphone in terms of the wider world. He speaks very well, speaks quite eloquently. He kind of knows how to give a line or two. So when he won the World Championship this year, he ended up on mainstream programming in a way that darts champions probably haven't in recent years. So in one way, that works for them. But for journalists, it's incredibly tough.
Why the stage management?
Because, well, there's a cancellation culture fear. That's what it is. It's one wrong thing and you're done. You know, you can absolutely be just wiped from, all your sponsorships can be gone. You know, a move to another club that can all be gone with one wrong sentence. And that's the fear of that is just so prevalent in the players' minds, in the clubs' minds. They absolutely just want them to say as little as possible while also putting them out there to in a sense.
Yeah, the corporate culture has, you know, just swamped football and a lot of other things as well. And, you know, smart, casual corporate culture. And fear is very much at the centre of that. It's never about sort of... you know, bringing something new to the culture. It's always like, make sure you don't do anything stupid, right? Because our product is sort of worth so much. One of the most annoying aspects of it is, you know, when after a game you see players talking to each other on the pitch with their hands over their mouths, right? In case lip readers will deduce something offensive that they said. And as Linda says, like, sure, I mean, they live in this environment where if they say the wrong thing, it'll be all around the world in, you know, 2 seconds. So there's a justifiable aspect to it in that sense, but it's just horrible. I mean, it creates Paul Kimmich, he gives all these examples of parts of interviews he did or were done with players over the years, which are fascinating and brilliant and very kind of you know, just interesting. You know, on another level, like Leo Messi, I don't think I've ever heard him saying anything. And yet that doesn't in any way diminish his whatever he was bringing to the world.